Welcome to Profiling Criminal Minds. I'm Dan.
And I'm Dr. Redmond.
And we're back for more Season 11. And I gotta say, I'm not gonna say that we're gonna be extremely complimentary to the three episodes this week. But after last week, I think almost anything was gonna be a relief.
Isn't that funny? Because that was exactly what I was thinking. Oh, these are three such...
It's well, fine. Yeah. Well put together by comparison. They're fine.
Yeah. I mean, yes. And I mean, maybe if they hadn't followed the three and then the ones before that.
Yeah.
You know, but this last three, these were almost sensible.
Oh, God. In comparison, absolutely. Yeah. Like it's really a step up. But let's jump right into it with episode 10.
Mm hmm. Future perfect. The BAU returns to Florida after two people are found dead in St. Augustine, or St. Augustine, as I prefer to call it, but that's not what they call it.
Okay.
And find themselves profiling a killer who performs gruesome medical experiments on his victims in an attempt to find a cure for a mysterious disease. Meanwhile, Garcia grows stir crazy as the search for the Hitman Network continues.
All right. So yes, they're dealing with a guy who wants to find a fountain of youth. He is a dangerous psycho who doesn't know how medicine works and thinks that if you just inject people with jellyfish DNA, that will turn back the aging process and give old people, young people blood. It'll turn back the aging process. Nope, that's not science. It's not how that works. It's not how anything works, really. It's funny because he's so bad at this. And it's weird because it actually reminded me of, you know, a bunch of true life things, which is the old adage that it's like for people who aren't very smart, right? It's easy to think you have a great idea, right? Because you're not smart enough to know you had a bad idea. And I think that's the killer this week is a perfect example of that, because it's like he doesn't know any better, you know? Like, he's not smart enough to realize he's dumb. And that's kind of and I mean, as we've learned, he flunked out of med school because he couldn't handle the work. So it's that thing where it's like, you have a passion to do a thing, but you just don't have the ability to do the thing. So you delude yourself into thinking that, oh, well, secretly I'm smarter than everybody else. I recently watched that documentary about flat earthers, and that's got what's got me thinking about this. Where it's like, you got all of these people who are half smart, you know, who just like, they're smart enough to almost understand things, but because they don't understand things, they can't admit that they're just not capable of understanding it, which I think is fine. There's lots of stuff I don't get. But they're like, no, it can't be that I don't understand it. It must be that it's a conspiracy. And then you get magical thinking and you get flat earth people. And this is the medical equivalent of flat earth people.
No kidding.
Yeah, it's
like
pretty nuts.
It is. Yeah, I mean, and it's. How did nobody pick? Like, I don't see. Yeah, that's
well,
true.
Okay.
He's the equivalent. Okay, no, it is the equivalent because what else? I mean, I love. Yeah, I don't. That's
not a bad point to make.
No, it's not bad.
Bad comparison.
Analogy. It's not a bad comparison. People who, yeah, I mean, you can say if you understand how things work, you can disagree with.
Oh, absolutely. That,
but you have to be able to understand how things work
on a foundational level.
Yes, and you can't recode DNA by taking the blood out and putting new blood in.
No, that's just not what DNA
that's
is.
That's just the way. It works.
Do we now with CRISPR have the ability to recode DNA? Yes, but it's not going to be as easy as, you know, everyone, as people hope to, you know, genetically fix all of our problems. But yeah, you can't change DNA with blood transfusions or giving someone a shot. That's just a fact. It can't be done. What I do enjoy in the episode is that it's like, the idea that the guy is just, he's so fixated that he's able to do this. And they do nice character work with the people who are just desperate for any hope.
Yeah.
And I liked those scenes.
Yes, I did. You know, that poor couple.
Yeah.
I mean, although I have to admit, I'm watching them and thinking of my parents.
Yeah.
They had done this exact same thing. Exact same thing. And then my father is killed at the plant. But we won't go into that again. But that was just, you know, I was thinking about that when I was watching it. I thought, yeah.
Yeah. It struck a, yeah.
There's a lot of, no, there's a lot of things in my life that have made me go, why should I bother planning for the future? What do you mean planning? Yeah.
So many, you know, trucks swooped out of nowhere and just destroyed everything so many times that you're like, why am I planning?
Why am I planning? Because if I plan
every single time, you know, something goes along.
Yeah. Something comes along and crashes the whole thing. So what the hell?
Yeah. Okay. Well, you came by it honestly.
Yes.
I'll put it that way.
And this poor couple, I mean,
oh,
I felt
God, it's
so
horrible.
Sorry. It was good.
Yeah. That part of the episode is really good. I mean, the one thing I have issues with is I don't care how sick his wife is. When you drive up and see that the guy is working out of a, like, decrepit, abandoned building with shattered windows everywhere.
You turn around.
Yeah, you turn around and you just go to the hospital.
And call the cops.
Yeah, and call the cops. It's like, here, I need to lure you into my murderer's den. Like, that place is so obviously sinister that I can't believe that anyone would drive into it. Like, no, come on, guys.
And then give him walking down those old halls.
Those old creepy hallways. I'm like, no one would do this.
So I don't know, where were they from, you know?
It's they were, I mean, we don't actually learn where they're from. We know they're visiting and they got a bungalow because they're doing all these tests and treatments at this special clinic. But maybe they're from somewhere north, Florida, and they're just, this is the best doctor in state for this stuff.
Anyway,
but yeah, I do question the two different women. Like, again, I don't know how dating works today. Okay. So I'm not going to judge them too harshly, but this show posits that two different women have a guy who they have no previous relationship with say, come and meet me in a graveyard. And both of them do it, and don't tell anyone that they're doing it. That's weird, right?
Well, I would think it was weird. I certainly would not.
Go and meet a stranger in a graveyard in the middle of the night without telling anyone?
On a first date?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
I'm going to go on a limb and say, this man is not cute enough to get away with that kind of thing.
Well, he's not, I don't know about cute enough, but he certainly isn't socially.
Yeah, he's not great with
enough.
People. Yeah, he's not great with, like, convincing people to do things. Like, he is very shady and twitchy and nervous. And it's like, he is not the charming sort who can talk anyone into anything, which, again, you would need to be in order for these women to meet him in a graveyard in the first date. With, again, not, and the craziest part is it's like two women who work at the same diner, too.
I know. That was really weird.
That's weird, right? That he's like, he gets this woman from the diner to come with him, and she mysteriously disappears.
Disappears, and then another woman?
The other waitress is like, oh yeah, I will also go and meet this guy. Like, that seems crazy to me.
Yeah, because he did meet them at the diner.
Yeah, he met them both at the diner, and I'm like, really? Like, I'm not going to claim to be an expert in this kind of modern romance, but to me that seems like a stretch. Did that seem like a stretch to you?
Well, obviously they didn't take any lessons. Oh no, they're in Florida. It may
don't
not be as
mean.
Bad as Texas in its education system, but
yeah, exactly. But don't be mean. These women should, again, I don't want to blame
they
the victim.
Have known better.
They should know better than to meet a stranger in a graveyard in the middle of the night And again, if they did it and they had told people where they were going, that would be one thing. But it's like, they also didn't tell anyone where they were going. And that's the part that really bugs me.
Well, yeah, I think it is, the whole thing is strange. What, this guy just came into the graveyard all the time? I mean, came into the diner all the time, so they thought they knew him?
Yeah, I guess. But, you know, why didn't anyone at the diner remember him then? If yes. both women, he was comfortable enough with both women that they went off with him, right? Why was he not better known? You know, it's just very weird. What was the other thing, though? The other thing that really got me. Oh, yeah. The whole scene where they need... Oh, we just realized we need another body this episode, so he murders the doctor. That's such a crazy scene. Because she opens the door, she finds a man, like, using a hammer to break into a cupboard, and she's like, I'm going to walk towards this man. What are you doing? Just yell for help.
There are guards in this hospital. There are guards in
hospitals. Like, there's no way. There's not guards in the hospital. It's a hospital.
If she turned around,
there's two other nurses right down the hall.
That's right. And you can solve this by, if she runs down the hall, he can run after her. But
yeah. Well, no, you can't because there's other nurses there. Yeah. You get caught immediately. But yeah, that whole scene. And then it's like, he had the... How did he get the body out without being noticed? He did the completely not suspicious thing of getting a body bag and gurney from the morgue and bringing it up to an office and bringing it into the office and loading the body into a gurney and then bringing it back downstairs from the offices, not from the patient area. Yes, no one would notice that.
Of course not. Well, it was the middle of the night.
Doesn't matter. There's video cameras. Sorry. They're like, who could be responsible for this? Maybe just check the tape? There's video cameras. Load up the tape and watch the office. And oh, well, here's a guy taking a gurney with a corpse on it out of that doctor's office. Maybe he's the killer. Like, what is... How are you so bad at this? Although, honestly, like, that whole thing feels like they were saying, oh, we don't have enough dead bodies this week.
Yeah.
Let's attack another dead body. Yeah, because the girl survives.
Yeah, because the girl survived, so.
Yeah, they needed another, like, it was in their contract that they had to have X amount of dead bodies every week. They're like, maybe he just kills the doctor and gets away with it implausibly? Okay, sure. You know, we all want to go home. It's fine.
You don't have enough bodies. Yeah. The body count isn't high enough. Oh, well, God, I mean, think about it.
Like, because we only see the old... think about it. Because we see two corpses get found, and then the old man dies of a heart attack. But in the rest of the episode, there would be no other deaths if he didn't randomly go and kill that doctor.
But, yeah, in tech... Well, I guess...
The wife does die eventually.
Yeah, but that's a different thing. Yeah. When you're looking at this, right, you're going... Okay, but if you follow the argument, you have to have three dead bodies. You already had three, but I guess the heart attack doesn't count.
Heart attack? Well, no. I mean, corpses, what I always say is corpses that they find don't count towards the count. Like, I always joke about how they invariably need three dead bodies, but like corpses that they find under a wall or whatever generally don't count towards the overall number. You want, for a normal episode of Criminal Minds, you want someone to get killed in the opening teaser. You want a second to get person to get killed around the 18-minute mark, or 18 to 25-minute mark, and then you get the lady they rescue at the end of the episode.
Uh-huh.
And that is just structurally what you want to do. Whereas this week, other than an old man dying of a heart attack, if they hadn't thrown in this nonsense with the doctor, that would have been like, there would have been no person getting killed. And more importantly, there would have been no women getting killed. And how do you do an episode of Criminal Minds if a woman doesn't get murdered?
Oh, by the way, yeah, the other thing is that I'm going, why is he breaking open the case? He's been getting these drugs all along.
With exactly. No problem.
So why the hell is all of a sudden...
Smashing a lock with a hammer. Exactly. Yeah. That kind of came out of nowhere, right?
Yeah, that came out of nowhere because he seemed to have no problem and nobody was suspicious. Yeah. So whatever he was taking...
And I mean, I guess fundamentally, they need him to kill the doctor so they can get led to the patient, so they can, you know, just track their cell phone or however they get to the... How do they get to the building at the end? Do they track the patient's cell phone? Or I'm trying to remember how they get to the building at the end of the episode.
Well, I don't even know how they got to the building at the end of the episode.
I'm sure there's a line about it. Oh, no. Yeah. I'm sure
there's a line in there, but yes, you're right.
It's like one line or something.
Garcia was looking for things, right?
I think it's where the saltwater tanks or whatever were delivered to. Something like that. Because they found the guy who had been keeping the jellyfish. Yes. Yeah, he was keeping the jellyfish, and that's where they were delivered to. So there you go. So boom. Yeah, we got a nice episode. Well, but I mean, as much as we might complain about the doctor stuff, fundamentally, like, they do good character beats this week, and I really liked that. Like, this tragic relationship with this dying woman and her grief-stricken husband, it all felt real. It's, like, they're spending time with these characters in a bad situation in a way they normally don't. I thought it was, like, touching. You know, I was very happy with their portrayal of this horrible situation these characters find themselves in. So... for whatever else we say about the episode, I was completely happy with that part of the episode.
Yeah, and it was an okay episode.
Oh, totally.
I guess what I would say is it was a relief after last week.
Yeah, last week every episode was so dire and stupid that, like, it's nice to just see them. Yeah, we can just do a competent episode. And I was very happy to see that. So, yeah, it's not great. Amazingly, in a couple of weeks, we might be calling this the best episode of the season, which is really sad, considering it's, like, the absolute best thing you could say about it is that it's okay. But this has not been a great season. Speaking of, let's move on to the second episode this week.
The fun one!
It is so much fun.
Yeah, this is our connector to the final season.
Yeah.
But anyway, So, entropy. As the BAU carries out an elaborate plan to take down the Hitman Network, Reed finds himself forced to engage in a high-stakes cat-and-mouse game with a narcissistic psychopath determined to learn why he took a leave of absence.
Wow. Yeah, but, why would you focus on that? Is so much not, like, that is not the focus of the episode at all.
No.
Right. But sure, you gotta say the episode's about something. It's about him taking a leap in absence. Why not? But yeah, that is such a weird, like, part of the plot to focus on. No, she wants to, you know, prove she's smarter, and the leave of absence thing is she wants to make him say something he doesn't want to say. It has nothing to do with the fact that, oh, there's some great mystery about why he's on leave of absence. The only thing that's important about it is he doesn't want to reveal it. And she wants to make him do something he doesn't want to do. That's the extent of it. If he had just said why he was on a leave of absence from the start, she wouldn't have, like, it's not like she would have thought, aha, this is the key to understanding the situation. No, like, she literally just wants to make him do something that makes him uncomfortable because that'll put him off kilter.
Yep.
And it's the start of her, you know, twisted obsession with Reed. Mm-hmm. So can I just mention how ludicrous how fast they wrap up the assassin storyline is? Like, so you were asked to believe that this, you know, international group of assassins who are impossible to find, right? Completely, you can't find them, you can't deal with them, whatever. They, like, 90% of the time, and I'm trying to think, there's 5 of them, but nobody ever sees the bomber, so practically there's only 4 of them. They're spending, I would say, full-on 50% of their lives hanging out in a tiny house in suburban Virginia, babysitting a teenager who runs their online operations. What? That is such a crazy idea, right?
Well, I enjoyed this episode.
No, but the premise at the beginning, how are we going to take these guys down? Well, 2 of them will just be hanging out in a room waiting to be shot. Oh, okay. What? And I love that the idea that they have this elaborate system to insulate them from all of their clients and all anybody possibly catching them, yet their partner, the head of the NSA, was put in jail 3 months ago, and they have taken, oh, not 3 months ago, like 3 weeks ago, and they have taken no steps to update their plans or acknowledge that the cops are on to them. Like, they know that the head of the NSA is their partner, and they know he was caught. How do they know he was caught? Well, in order to not get caught, he hired them to shoot his deputy at the NSA. And they did shoot his deputy at the NSA, and that didn't work. So whether or not the... Yeah, oh, exactly, Hotch was smarter, but whether or not the newspapers plastered it all over, because it's possible they kept it out of the newspapers, you know, to keep everyone from losing faith in the government. They tried to keep it on the QT that the director of the NSA is in jail for running a drug cartel.
And excuse me, even in 2015,
I feel like people would notice that that had happened, right?
2016, yes.
Yeah, 2015, I think people would 16. Notice that have happened.
2015, yeah. I guess, yes.
Yeah, 2015.
So it actually happened maybe 5 weeks ago or six
weeks ago. Yeah, 5 weeks ago, exactly. Right? So 5 or 6 weeks ago, like, these people know that they've been compromised.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they know that their partner, who was the director of NSA, who was giving them cover for their activities, they know he's been arrested, yet they're still just all, like, hanging out in this apartment with the guy who they keep hostage to do their computer tech stuff for them. And I'm like, it doesn't make sense to me at all.
Okay. But how long has this been? How long has this hitman organization been in existence?
They're never super clear on that, because it's weird. I guess we're supposed to believe they've been working together for a while, but they only just recently started using this guy to work their darknet stuff. Because, again, he's a teenager.
Well, that's what I was wondering.
Yeah, because he can't have been there since he was, like, 12. You know?
No, I think his parents might have gotten a little upset.
Yeah, you'd think. But yeah, like, maybe he's emancipated. We don't know anything about his background, but the point is, he's a kid. And they keep him locked in a room doing their coding, and two of them are hanging out next to him all of the time when they're not going and murdering people. It just doesn't seem a very sustainable action. Like, it's not a sustainable way to run a criminal organization. And once you find out that you've been compromised and your government cover is gone, just shut the whole thing down. I mean, I don't wish bad on this kid, but just kill the kid, take your money, and go home.
Well, that would have been what you would have thought they would do.
Oh, yeah. But the idea, like, imagine a situation. Maybe start again someplace else. But the point is, try to imagine a situation where you, a criminal, right? You run a criminal organization, and you know for a fact a person who knows every detail of your criminal organization is in custody with the FBI. Like, and you take no steps to change up anything. That just doesn't make sense.
No, it just defies all logic.
Yeah, it all defies all logic and believability. And so it's like they didn't. Well, I mean, I was about to say, it's like they don't know how to deal with this kind of complicated storytelling. But the NSA episode from last week proves they don't know how to deal with this kind of complicated storytelling. And so it's just like, I honestly feel this episode feels like, oh my God, we know we're in over our heads. Let's just wrap this up this week and pretend this story never happened. Because that is what it feels like to me.
Uh-huh.
Like, let's just pretend this all never happened. Let's just go.
Yeah, move it on out. Let's move on. Let's do a comedy episode.
Comedy, but it is a fun episode.
It's a fun episode.
It's so much fun. And now we can talk about, the plot, ludicrous, of course, but... Oh, Aubrey Plaza is so much fun, and her and Matt Goobler are so much fun together.
Yes.
Oh, like, do I believe that any serial killing hit person would regularly go and meet with clients? Of course not. That's an insane thing to do, and the whole point of your organization is you do this stuff anonymously, so you can't be caught. But no, They've set up a thing where she'll want to kill the guy, so she goes and she meets him. And she knows it's probably a trap, but she goes anyway, which we later learn that she is a very self-destructive person, so we can't even question that. So it really comes down to how is the interplay between the two actors, and I think it's really good.
Oh, yeah. I thought the whole thing was, I mean, that, if there was anything this year that could be considered a tour de force performance, this would be it. Them in the restaurant.
Yeah. It's the most showy scene the entire year.
Yeah.
And it earns it. It absolutely earns it just because the writing has raised its level and the performances have absolutely upped their game to be worthy of the attention of this scene.
Yeah.
I am not as big a fan of the second appearance of Aubrey Plaza, and the third one was okay. But this first one, I really get why people loved her as a character and wanted to see her keep coming back, because that's how good this first episode is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like, the plot might not make a ton of sense, but what I love is, this is one of the rare times you see, okay, well, let's use profiling to figure out what her weak spots are in advance.
Yeah.
And it's believable the way they do it.
Oh, yes, the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, the only reason, because they know she's a hitman, but she's constantly throwing away money, right?
Yeah.
She's constantly throwing away money to murder guys she doesn't like, which is not a good thing to do if you're a hitman. And so they realize, okay, well, this is obviously, it is serving some psychological purpose to her that's more important than the money. What could that be? And that leads them down the track necessary to get to figuring out her obsession with her father that killed her mother.
Yes.
So yeah. I think all of that works.
Oh, the only funny. No, all of that works. And the only funny thing is when Aisha goes, Tara.
Yeah.
Tara goes, oh, she said something about gender. Maybe it's more than just her. Maybe the bomber's a woman.
I know. That was bad. That was so bad.
I thought to myself,
come on.
I guess that's a comedy. I just saw it as a comedy episode.
Well, but my big problem in the end of the episode is it's like, I understand that to a certain extent there is, and this is why they get along so well, Kat is a little suicidal, just like Reed is a little suicidal, right? Mm-hmm. She has such an awful life, just like him. In a way, they are soulmates, because they've had these such horrible lives that they approach everything with a kind of fatalism, and on one level would be okay if any day they're living is their last day. So if you ask me, do I believe that the character they've created in her would walk into a building full of dynamite, knowing that she's going to have to blow herself up rather than, like, she'd be okay with blowing herself up rather than getting caught? I believe that character would do that. What I don't believe is that the bomber would want to blow herself up as well. What's she doing in the building?
Yeah.
You know? I don't understand why she's sitting in the bar. Like, why is she so down to commit suicide as well? Kat, sure. She's desperately messed up, but we don't learn anything about being willing to blow yourself up rather than being caught is a kind of resolve we need to have established, but it especially has to be established when she's in a position to not get caught. No one knows what she looks like. She doesn't have to be. No one knows what she looks like. Not even the other. Like, she has been so careful about her identity that she never even went and guarded the computer guy.
Yep.
Like, they established this. And yet, we're asked to believe she would just be like, yeah, she would just go into the bar and risk blowing herself up. What?
Yeah, she's in the restaurant, sitting there, and nobody even, yes. It was like, just kind of weird.
Yeah, it's so weird. Because it's like,
particularly since none of them knew who she was, how did Kat know who she was?
Well, no, I think the other killers knew who she was.
Ah, okay.
It's only the computer guy who didn't know what she was. I mean, we don't know. All of the other killers are dead. But I mean, Kat knows who she is, obviously, because they work together. But Ken. Just the vision of all of these high-priced international assassins just hanging out in a tiny unfurnished house and, like, cycling whose turn it was to hang out in this tiny unfurnished house in Virginia suburbs.
Well, and I mean, and they kept the kid in there 24 hours a day.
Or a day. Yeah.
I mean, it just, like, it was just, that was too crazy. Yeah.
And
you
I
know,
mean,
I mean, I like the scene where Garcia tells him to duck.
I know, and it's a fun scene where she does the cards. You know,
I said, there were all sorts of little fun scenes in here. And...
Oh, no, but I mean, I think you're right. It's not a comedy episode, but it is an episode where, like, the main point here is that everybody's having a good time.
Uh-huh.
Like, they're clearly having a lot of fun making this episode, and they're not worried about sweating the small stuff. But it's like, you know, you could just have... Like, you could just have the bomber listening to them from a building X amount of space away and, like, have Garcia use science magic to track her and then have them run over there and catch her. It's just, like, this extra detail of having her being in the room for no reason. It bothers me.
Well, yes, but remember that they probably didn't have money for another location.
Okay, you make a strong point.
That had to be an expensive location to rent.
It's true, yeah. Like, they were spending a lot of money on that bar. Yeah, and...
And
they're paying for Aubrey Plaza, and they have a bar. Yeah. Like, they have a legit famous person in this episode. So, okay.
Yeah.
I get it. And they had to do all of the extra scenes introducing the other hitmen and stuff like that. So, okay. I get it. But at the same time, I think you understand my criticism.
Except the hitmen would have been extras because they
They have, it doesn't matter. When you have those kind of elaborate actions to do, they are paid actors. They're nobodies, but they are paid actors. Yeah. Like the second they start giving you a lot of stuff to do, they legit have to pay you real money. It's just kind of funny. But no, like honestly, this, I said about the last episode jokingly, we might as I might be about various plot things, I might wind up calling this the best episode of the season because it is so much fun.
Well, it was just so much fun.
Yeah.
You know? And
they leave you hanging. It's like, how much of this did they plan and how much of this were they making up as they went along? And you're never entirely sure with the characters if they're just really good at bluffing or they had this backup story about her father planned all along. You think you have a definitive answer on that one?
Well, I would have said based on what I watched that no, they didn't have it all planned all along.
Right.
Because they would not have, they might have factored in that she would have figured it was a trap.
Yeah.
But I don't think they could have figured that she was going to do the 30-minute thing.
No, they couldn't have. But at the same time, and you have to assume that she's going to, if she figures it's a trap, she will have a gun or something to keep herself safe. So, yeah. You're right. I mean, it is, there is a good reason to believe they were just making that up as they went along, which, you know, from a dramatic storytelling standpoint, really does make the team look good and way to go show.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, like fundamentally, It's good writing about the psychology. It's good writing about the characters. It's really good acting from the performers. It is definitely the high point of the season so far.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I was very happy with this episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'll criticize things here and there because I always do. That's just who I am. But I'm not going to pretend I didn't have a great time rewatching this one because it was only my second time watching it ever, and I had a good time.
Yeah, it was. That's what I always say. You know, things don't have to be perfect to be fun or for you to enjoy them. But,
absolutely.
But you know, and this one was. I mean, it was almost as if, you know, we were back a couple of seasons.
Yeah, so, I mean, is it ever as dramatic as the? I mean, they've only ever had one meaningful showdown ever in the history of the show, and that is the conversation with Frank.
Oh, that was, I mean, that.
And is this on that level? No, it's not on that level.
No.
But it's really good.
Yeah. No, it can't be Frank and Gideon. No. Sitting in the diner.
Sitting in that diner. Yeah.
Oh. Jeez. Oh, my God. That was a brilliant episode.
It is. It's one of the best episodes they've ever done to this day. Like, they've rarely come close to that, let alone topped it. All right, so let's move on to our third episode, 1112.
Drive. When three Boston, Massachusetts women are tortured, decapitated, and dumped in various public locations, the BAU suspects the killings are connected to a local rideshare service the victims used prior to their deaths.
Okay. So my big question to you, and the show is maddeningly unclear about this, yes or no, was this guy molested by that priest? I think he was. But the show seems to imply that he wasn't. And you're going to leave me hanging on this for some reason.
Oh, he wasn't a priest. He was a minister.
Oh, sorry, minister. My bad.
I'm sitting here going, what priest? There was no priest.
The minister. You knew what I meant.
Well, no, so. Actually, I'm sitting here going, I don't know whether my cold's coming back or something, but all of a sudden I'm just like, but I'm sitting there going, what priest? There was no priest.
Minister.
But then again, I watched A Midsummer's Murders last night that did have this weird priest in it.
Okay.
And I'm going, no. So where's the priest in this episode? No. He was like a fundamentalist. He was a Presbyterian or whatever.
That's not relevant to my question. That's not relevant to my question.
Was he molested?
Yes. I feel
turn
like
him
he
into to turn this. Him into this. My suspicion would be that he had been, and he had forgotten it.
Yeah, because it bothered me so much that you get to the end of the episode, and all he'll say is that while he was pretending to be righteous, he was molesting girls, and pretending to be good and blah, 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 blah. And so now I have to get revenge on a bunch of women and one random guy. And I'm like, really?
No, he had to get revenge on people who did bad things.
Yes.
No, and I do actually, but it could be, you see, here's to turn him here.
Okay.
As long as he could deny that he'd been sexually abused as opposed to just physically and emotionally abused,
yeah,
he would have to think that this guy was right because he believed in this guy.
Okay.
Okay. And so when it comes out that he had molested the women, and it still holds true that men are much less likely to ever admit that they were sexually abused as a child.
That's true.
Okay. So the women are coming out with it. And then that, of course, is going to that would be the trigger for his memories. He'd be having to force off his memories. And the only way to push his memories back would be to find people who have done something wrong.
Yeah.
And then make them confess. And then kill them.
Well, and this is a big problem I had with the killer's motivation in the episode, because it didn't track internally the logic of it for me. Because what he explains is, let me finish. What he explains is that he says this guy got away with killing, like he took the easy way out and didn't have to publicly face the consequence of his actions. But because he killed himself, right? Because he killed himself after being publicly humiliated for all the kids he molested, right?
Yeah.
And so I am going to kill people to make sure that they don't face the public consequences of their actions. And I'm like, well, but don't you want to shame people? Like, isn't this whole thing? How is you cutting off their heads any different than him hanging himself? They're still not going to suffer public humiliation. Like, what's your motive here?
It will be after death.
Yeah, but well, then he's getting punished after death. So, but I'm saying if he believes people are getting punished after death, why is he pissed off about the guy killing himself? He, according to this guy's internal logic, that guy's currently suffering punishment after death.
No. But you're thinking this too logically.
No, but that's my point. There's no internal consistency.
Well,
to
Thing. Well, no, I yeah, the decapitation and the public display of the bodies.
Yeah.
Doesn't quite track, except that he was a child and he'd been in that place forever.
Yeah.
And his mind got increasingly warped, and like we're not given within the structure of this particular episode a really clear enough reason why he's doing this. It doesn't make sense the way it's laid out that this is going to
transform him into a guy who cuts people's heads off and leaves their bodies
like in public. If he had been, you see, the only thing that would make sense is that he had learned to be an injustice collector,
right,
from the time he was little, and so therefore he had been all along been. And then when he finds out that it's all been in vain, then he completely freaks out.
Well, I think what would have been interesting, right, is if, like, what if, like, he had always been, like, too afraid to confront this guy who had molested him and all these other people, and the guy had just died of a heart attack, and the thing that triggered him to start making sure people suffered the consequences of their actions was this guy died of a heart attack, and now he's getting publicly celebrated in death as someone who worked with kids and was a real person all these years. I could see that would trigger you into thinking, these people never get punished, nobody ever finds out, right? And I'm going to make the sins they do, I'm going to make sure that other people pay for their secret sins.
Yeah, no, that would make more sense.
That would make sense. But the idea that the guy gets publicly shamed and then gets publicly shamed worse by having killed himself to avoid a trial, I don't see how that motivates you, because he's not getting away with it.
No, and that's the whole thing, right? Within the episode, like when you watch the episode, if you don't think about it, it's not bad.
No,
it's not bad. I would agree with that. It's, you know, the BAU doesn't do terribly this time.
No.
And but when you want to look at it, doesn't, like, you're going, okay, but the knuckles?
Yeah.
So he's rapping and he does that to the knuckles, and the parents don't believe that these boys are being abused, physically abused. Okay. And you see the scene where the kids are saying, but we didn't do it, and he's saying, don't lie to me, because he doesn't believe them. And yeah. But it doesn't track into what he's doing now.
That's what I'm saying. Yes.
Like, yeah, that's what you're trying. There's no relationship between that and what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yes.
There has to be more to this than, because why would you all of a sudden torture, decapitate, and dump?
Like, these women. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's my issue.
Yeah, I mean, the motivation here is not at all, clear.
Oh, absolutely.
At all.
No, it's not clear.
This is what he has chosen to do. There has to be a reason why this is what he's chosen to do.
This is the form that his, you know, madness has taken. It needs to come from somewhere, and it's just not.
And it's not there. No, it's not there in the flashbacks that they showed us. It's not there at all.
In his monologue. Okay. Another weird issue with the episode. And I mean, again, I don't take Ubers. I have a car. It's not like I don't live in the kind of city where you can only get around by taking Ubers. So I can't speak to this. But two things and Kat, like, spoke to me as being very, very false, right? Thing number one. That anyone would find it anything but unbelievably creepy to have someone follow you to your door after getting out of the car. They're like, because the characters are like, he must have followed her to her door. That's the kind of thing an Uber driver would do to try and increase his rating. I'm like, no, I know a lot of people who take a lot of taxis, and the idea of a taxi driver getting out of the car and following you to your door is immediately alarming, and no one would ever do that. Like, well, the second you get out of the car, your relationship with the Uber driver is over. If he started getting out of the car, you would be freaked out by that.
I have nothing to say to that, except that when I was watching that, I thought they were coming home from a date.
That's the only, exactly, and I did too, because no taxi driver is walking you to your door. That's not how anything works.
Because I think that he expect that they had gone on a date. It didn't go very well, and yeah. He expected her to invite him in, and she did.
That's exactly how the ball, you know, exactly, all of that saying reads. Yes, thank you.
That's how it reads, that it's just a date.
Yes. And so okay, I'm not crazy.
No.
Okay, good. Whew. I thought I was, like, being too harsh. But yeah, like, that read, that's not how anyone's experience with having an Uber driver works.
And then because to follow this one up, right, yeah. Because then when he's sitting across the street looking at the girl who's waiting, pacing yeah. back and forth, right, and they're saying, well, how does he pick them up? And he's doing this, and I'm going, that doesn't make any sense.
Well, yeah, like this insane, they seem to be operating in this insane world where people just drive around, right? Drive around looking for people, where this killer drives around looking for people who are waiting on Ubers and then driving up to them saying, hey, I also work for a car service. If you give me cash, I will take you to your destination. Right. And you can cancel your Uber and I will, you can pay me less. And I'm like, but the whole reason Ubers have caught on is it feels safer than getting into a stranger's car. Also, people don't have cash anymore. Like, nothing about his MO. Can you imagine? So you're a woman. It's nighttime. You just walked out of a bar. You on your phone says in 3 minutes, your driver, Steve, will be here. Here's what car, here's the car he's driving. Here's what he looks like. Here's his record from other people. So that is the information you have. It's going to cost you, $25 to get home. You know that. And now a complete stranger pulls up to the curb and yells at you. Hey, are you waiting for a car? I can take you where you want to go for $5 less. Who on, like, what woman in the middle of the night walking out of a bar is going to be anything but really disturbed by that?
Well, this is the second time they've used that.
I know, right? Like, they've got an Uber on the way. Why would
but
you
But at least the other one, the other one made a little bit more sense because... the other one made a little more sense because at least he was hacking, right? This guy wasn't even hacking. He was just driving around.
Yeah, he was just driving around and pulling up to people and asking them to get into his car. And I'm like, yeah, that doesn't work anymore. You can't drive up to someone and offer them a ride. That's why we have Uber. So we won't have to put up with getting into a creepy stranger's car. The entire, like, business model of Uber is providing, through knowing the name and car of your driver and being given this track of exactly where they are, giving you the illusion that there is some level of security to the car you're going to get into. That is what Uber is for. So the idea that all of these people are just hailing Ubers, and especially the guy who comes running out of the hotel and waves down an Uber and says, you know, cancel the whatever fare you're going to, I will give you an extra $20. Like, who would do that?
Well, not if you want a good rating on your Uber.
Exactly. Now this guy is taking if you're an Uber, like, who would expect that an Uber driver would agree to that? He's going to screw up his rating for X amount of money. For not some huge amount of money either. Like,
$20 ain't going to cut it. Not in exactly. 2015.
$20 to screw up his rating? No, that's not worth doing. No. 2016. Yeah, like, that's just not worth it to him. And that's what really bugged me about this episode, is it's like, I don't take Ubers, but I know enough people who do, who have told me that, yeah, nothing about this episode's presentation of Uber culture makes any sense whatsoever. It would have made more sense if he was hacking the app, because at least then you'd have an excuse. But then that doesn't work within the logic of the show. Well, you've got this big problem with the logic of the show where he...
Like, how does he know these other women? Did these other women tell him these things?
Yes, no. He overhears them talking on the cell phones in their car. That's how he finds his victims. That everybody gets on their cell phone in the car and just starts confessing the sleazy stuff they do in this world.
Oh, come on. Particularly since one of them was siphoning money off from her client. She's going to talk about that in a car?
I know. She's like talking with her banker in the Cayman Islands about where they're going to hide her illegal money in a taxi. That's insane.
I don't think so. She's not that stupid. If she was smart enough to be able to do... all that money.
She's loudly talking about it in public.
Bernie Nader. And why would the girl who shoplifted be talking about that on her phone?
I know. No, it's like it's crazy.
Now we're really starting to rip this.
Get into it. Well, because it's not a good episode. No, but within that, right? And I think the dumbest one, though, of all of that, like all of this is pretty dumb. Right. But by far the dumbest one when you're listening to this premise is that we're then told that he was fired from Uber for threatening to smash in a woman's head with a hammer. Right. And then they say, but charges were never filed. That's why he didn't turn up in our search for people who had criminal records but drove Ubers. Like, yeah, but don't just do a criminal record search. Ask Uber, BTW, did you recently fire anyone for threatening to kill his passengers? It seems like that would be, like, whether or not he got charged with a crime, getting fired for threatening to kill a passenger is the kind of person you might be looking for. Don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, it was just that, you know, you have because we watched three episodes, and in Entropy we had, you know, it was such a nice episode. It was fun episode. You give this one a bit of a break, but it didn't make
you
it,
want to.
It
didn't, yeah, it didn't make a ton of sense.
No, it didn't make a ton of sense. Particularly the Uber thing, because it was. Remember, I seem to have very strangely some episodes I remember. But some I seem to have just kind of checked out on because it's almost like I'm watching them for the first time.
Right.
Totally. I mean, I've watched them all because I bought season 11.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got the DVDs. Season 11. Yeah. Because I was so desperate to see what was going to happen in season 11, and I was sadly mistaken. But I still bought season 12. I know. No, that's not why. It was because season 11 at the library had a couple of
bonus features
discs
that didn't work
didn't work, and then season 12 there was something like that, right? It was the same thing. There was, because I have this weird thing of season 1 and 2 and 11 and 12. I think 12 was because I wanted to see what happened in season 12, but season 11 was like 1 and 2 I bought for the same reason,
right?
Because they had commentaries, and the one commentary I couldn't even listen to because it stopped about 10 minutes in.
That's terrible. That is the
episode,
worst.
Yeah. So that's why I bought those ones. But so season 11 I bought and I watched clearly, and yet I obviously didn't. It's almost like I'm watching, I'm watching it for the first time.
I don't want to be too mean, but it's hard not to check out on some of these episodes.
Yeah, and this episode
is a perfect example of
it. There's kind of an episode there if you could have done things that made sense, but the rideshare business never made any sense. But I just yesterday when I was watching it, just wrote it off, right?
Yeah, you just want to dismiss it as being, okay, well, this is the contrivance we need to get the story going. But it's like, why I rankle when I hear them say that, we didn't find him on our check because we didn't think to check. We only thought to check with people who were actually charged with crimes, not with people who threatened to violently assault people and were fired from their jobs because of it. I'm like, it seems to me like that would be something that you would have asked about. You Doesn't it seem like that's something you would have asked about? Did anyone threaten to violently? Because we're looking for a guy with enough anger to cut off women's heads.
Well, and men's heads.
He hadn't killed any men yet.
No, but he would have.
No, but I'm talking about them.
I'm talking about them and their reaction.
Yes. Yeah, them and their reaction. They're like, this is a guy who's been going around sawing off and then chopping off women's heads. And it's like, don't you think, have any, you know, any of your employees recently been fired? Yes.
I know why he's mad at women.
Please.
It's because all of these girls that he, that this preacher man,
molesting.
Was sexually molesting didn't tell.
Oh, okay.
I'm trying to find motivation here. Okay. Right? Except that falls immediately apart. It just falls apart completely because then he hears the guy who says he's cheating on his wife, and that's it. It's a guy. So,
So you're right. Even that logic doesn't make sense. But my point is, it's like the first thing you would do would be like, does anyone threatened or assaulted any women in your cabs? And 6 weeks ago, we had to fire a guy for threatening to smash a woman's head in with a hammer. Again, that's a good reason to give this guy a look. You know, maybe let's check in on that guy. Just FYI, you know, let's see what that guy's up to. At least is something you'd think they would do, but they don't, and that's just absolutely ludicrous. Also, one thing that bothered me was the show trying to be extravagantly bleak in a way it is from time to time. Because there is a scene where they're talking with the ME about the various kinds of beheading that were used, right?
Yes. Oh, yeah. That was...
And it's like the first woman had her head sawn through. And then... But the later ones they used, he used some kind of a clean cut. And the thing that bothered me was while they're doing... This is unpleasant enough. This is disturbing enough. You win. It's hard to watch. I get it. But then they have the friggin' character say, there were no signs of drugs in the body. Which means he's doing this to them while they're conscious. Which is true, but there's a big problem with that, which is you don't know that. You don't have the heads. No. He could have shot each one of them in the head before sawing the head off. Yeah. You don't know that these women were alive when they had their heads cut off. Yes, there were. It's an unpleasant show. That's the kind of thing that happens on it, but... The idea that they immediately jumped to the conclusion that these women were murdered, like, and they talk about it, these women were murdered while screaming in agony, and I'm like, come on, show. Do you have to wallow in it?
Yes. And I hate to say it, it's a woman again who wrote this episode.
Really?
Yeah. Which goes to our...
Your theory, your theory of, of the... The performative excess, like the need of women who work on this show to prove that they belong there by performing brutality in their scripts. It does seem more and more likely with every time something like this comes up.
Yeah, it is very strange. I mean, this isn't one where it's whenever I go, well, guess, because we know where the excesses come from.
Yeah.
But, this one too. And it's not someone new.
Oh, okay. It's someone new?
Yeah, it was someone new.
But
she wrote Till Death Do Us Part this season.
Oh, the one with the brides being killed that made zero sense whatsoever.
Yeah, okay. So it's true to form.
this I gotta say, this writer is not wowing me with her performances
but there were so many things that didn't make sense out of that. In fact, I'm sorry, but I really don't believe it's that easy to build a guillotine.
I know, it does seem like
within three days.
I know,
the idea is the first one was killed and it was like only a few days later,
and then it's like 2 days later he's got a guillotine.
He's got a guillotine. I don't think so.
Yeah, that does seem like a stretch.
Sheet metal, and I'm going, do you know
just go to Home Hardware and buy a frame and just buy some sheet metal and you'll have a guillotine. I don't think it's that easy.
No, because the blade of a guillotine
isn't just a piece of sheet metal.
They're
thick and they're sharp.
They're like an axe.
Yeah.
They're iron, they're heavy.
And they have to be, in order to cut cleanly, they have to be super heavy.
And sharp. Yeah.
Yeah. Super heavy, super sharp. So yeah, no, the show does act like it's way easier to build a guillotine than it probably is.
Yeah, to find the kind of, oh, give me a break.
It's a bit.
But Joe says that, I'm going, oh, okay, yeah, sure. Goes with the rest of the episode.
Yeah.
But it was some.
At a certain point, we just have to accept it, right?
Yeah, at a certain point, you just accept it. But
yeah, you're right that was very questionable, even by this show's logic.
Yeah.
The fact that, oh, yeah, just pop again, just drop by Home Hardwell. You have a guillotine in 5 minutes.
You know, no. Now, if there had been 3 weeks or 4 weeks
between the murders, then yeah, maybe.
The guy found it too unpleasant to be chopping off a woman's or somebody's head while they were alive with an axe.
Yeah. So
therefore, he decided he had to do something better, and he went on the internet and he found out how to make a guillotine.
Guillotine and build it. And you have this downtime while he's learning. Yeah, and there's a downtime between the first and second murders while he's figuring out how to be a better murderer. Okay, I see your point.
Yeah, you could do. You know, yeah. Somewhere along that line, that the entire episode would have. Well, that
made
part
a ton
of
more sense.
Would have made a little more sense.
You
know this. This is, yeah, because he'd have to have a blade, that kind of a blade fired separately, because it's not, like you couldn't go to Home Hardware, sheet metal.
And just do that, yeah.
No, you just couldn't, so you'd have to, yeah, no, it has to be iron or whatever, some really heavy metal. Obviously, whoever wrote this episode knows nothing about history of the guillotine.
No, that's, if anything, that's very clear. All right, so yes, not a stellar episode.
A lot
of stuff wrong with the psychology, a lot of stuff wrong with the detectiving, just a mess all over the place.
Except that it wasn't as bad as last week's.
No, but there's nothing so dire. Like last week's episodes were so terrible that these three, I mean, even if Entropy wasn't one of the most fun episodes,
yeah,
that these three episodes would still look great in comparison. And to the show's credit, you know, after those truly dire episodes last week, they really did a great job with two mediocre episodes and then one just really good episode, so yeah, they're pulling it back. So yeah, which brings me to the big question: what do we have to look forward to next week?
We are going to watch The Bond.
Okay, what's The Bond?
When two people are blitz attacked, stabbed to death, and posed post-mortem at different truck stop restrooms throughout the
okay site. got it, go next.
Okay. Hostage. When a missing St. Louis, Missouri foster child leads local authorities to a house where she claims to have been held against her will with two other girls.
Wait, that episode is called Hostage? That's not a good title for that episode. Like, I'm not saying, name it after the flower girls' names, because he gives all the girls names of flowers and stuff like that. Like, do something like that. Calling that episode Hostage is weird. Because a hostage is someone you keep for a reason, specifically. These are not hostages, but anyway. A hostage is something you keep against a bad thing happening.
Well, you keep a hostage because... Anyway, never mind.
To make sure
we'll
something happens or something... We'll discuss it later, but I'm just saying, it's a bad title for that episode.
Well,
go.
Yes. And then the third one is A Badge and a Gun.
Oh, no! And by the way, this is an entire episode of television built around the fact that the writers don't understand that when you quit the FBI, you don't get to keep your badge. That's the entire plot of the episode, is the writers not knowing that. And you can say, well, actually, Dan, they do get to keep the badge. Yes, but do you know what they do first? They put a giant stamp that says retired over it, so it cannot possibly be used for the reasons it is used in this episode.
Okay.
Like the episode that more than any other episode can't happen. Please.
Yeah, but guess who wrote it?
Oh no, Jim Clemente?
Yep.
How does Jim Clemente not know this?
Well, the episode doesn't work if like, has this little piece of reality in it.
You're right. And I mean, the thing is, and it's true that like the scariest thing to like any police officer is their badge getting stolen, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because something like this could happen. Someone could go out and impersonate them and it would be disastrous because people are supposed to respect the badge first.
Yeah.
Right. But because in the episode, it's a retired person's badge, the entire episode doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than being an active agent's badge.
Yeah, we'll talk right about away. This next week.
You're right. Why am I talking about it now? I apologize.
This now.
All right. So, yes, that's your homework if you want to watch along with us. We hope you will join us back here for that. Until then, if you have any questions, if you have any comments, if you have any suggestions for profiling-related fiction you think we should check out, please drop us a line at profilingcriminalminds@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. We will see you. Oh, yes. And if you're listening to this on any kind of a podcast client, be sure to leave a rating so other people can find the show. We will see you back here for those episodes next week. But until then, I'm just going to say au revoir.
Have a good weekend.
Profiling Criminal Minds is a member of the Kinks Podcasting Network.